Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Well, good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Glad to be with you as we continue to examine the aftermath of, well, it's not really the aftermath yet. That's part of the problem. We have the Associated Press and some media organizations that have made their predictions in their projections. It's not uncommon. They do that every 4 years, right? The difficulty is that there is a sitting president who claims that this was a fraudulent election. And in fact, the investigation is going on. It's ongoing. We'll see if it amounts to anything. But good heavens, what are you supposed to do when you have a sitting president who says this election is fraudulent? We're going to have to investigate it. I mean, he's got the full authority of the federal government behind him, the FBI, the Attorney General's office, you know, the Department of Justice. He's got the Republican Party and nationally and in all the states. He's got his own set of lawyers. In other words, there's going to be a lot of data being sifted. A lot of data being sifted. I think I mentioned, last week I mentioned that the Republican Party of Nevada sent to Attorney General Barr 362 names that they thought were invalid. Now, I don't know how that changes things in Nevada. I don't know if it's going to be actionable or not. But those are stories that deserve attention. Rather than just assuming the old script, you know, the usual every 4 years. I mean, you don't even have a concession speech here. So it seems to me, if you want to report on this, you ought to be reporting on the big story, which is the threat of fraud. You may not believe it. You may not buy it. But it is a big story that a sitting U.S. president who has responsibility for fair and free elections, that he has said there's been fraud. This is a serious matter, no matter how you slice it. So, we're going to continue to do our best to understand this phenomenon. Dr. Paul Kengor with me, what happened in Pennsylvania. Adil Hudson will be joining me. He'd served as a Catholic liaison for the Bush White House back in 2000, 2004. And I'll have a few words on trying to do justice in a time of injustice. But first, the headlines.
Thank you, Al, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, November 9th. It's the feast of the dedication of St. John Lateran Basilica. And today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at charitymobile.com. In a race to develop a coronavirus drug, Pfizer says that tests show their medication is 90% effective. Dean of Baylor College of Medicine, Dr. Peter Hotez, says that if it's true, it would be amazing.
None of the scientific communities had the opportunity to review the data, but it tentatively looks like this is giving a high level of protection. What we don't know is the level of severity that it's protecting.
Hotez says the drug is far from perfect. It's difficult to produce and requires frozen storage. But he says it's a big step forward in finding a cure. According to the Charlotte Loser Institute, the vaccine has not been developed from fetal cell lines. The vaccine comes as the U.S. passes 10 million total COVID cases. The beatification cause of a Polish religious sister who was tortured by Joseph Stalin's secret police and reputedly bore the stigmata has been open. Sister Wanda Boniszewska, who died in 2003 at the age of 96, was a member of the Congregation of the Sisters of the Angels, and her spiritual journey has been compared to St. Faustina's diary. She wrote extensively on suffering and reportedly received the stigmata in 1933. In April 1950, she was arrested and tortured by the NKVD. A year later, she was exiled to Siberia. She was released by the Soviet authorities in 1956. Speaking at the opening of her cause, her pastor later said she remained heroically before Christ, witnessing to him and bearing the wounds of Christ on her body, and offering her sufferings for priests. And Jeopardy! Host Alex Trebek has passed away. The announcement was made on the game show's official Twitter page, saying he died Sunday morning surrounded by family and friends. Executive producer of Jeopardy! Mike Richards appeared on the Today Show this morning to remember the late host.
I think the greatest thing about him was how much he loved his family. I mean, that's really, of all of the things he did and all of his accomplishments, his greatest accomplishment to him was his family, and his love of his wife.
Trebek had been suffering from pancreatic cancer, but continued to work through his illness. He was 80 years old. With your Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Well, Tuesday night, Pennsylvania seemed to be leading heavily towards President Trump. You always had Philadelphia. They were still working in Philadelphia. But there were still several Trump counties that were yet to report their votes. But over the next couple of days, it was really disconcerting to see the balance shift. The state was eventually called by the media for Biden. Now, my guest, Dr. Paul Kengor, is a native Pennsylvanian. He's author, most recently, of The Devil and Karl Marx. Paul joins us regularly, taking a look at matters political and historical. He is professor of political science at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania, and senior academic fellow at the Center for Vision and Values. Paul, good to have you with me. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Al. Good to be back.
Let's talk about this. You've been observed. Why did you begin paying such careful attention to these numbers? Why were you suspicious?
I thought for sure that Donald Trump would win Pennsylvania. And in fact, frankly, I find it hard to believe that he didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really shocking.
This is still being investigated, so.
It is, and I'll tell people listening here, it's not over. And I did a piece for American Spectator. It ran on Saturday morning over the weekend, and I talked about it on EWTN News Nightly on Friday evening.
Mm-hmm.
when I first found out about it. There is, Al, there are 100,000 provisional ballots in the state of Pennsylvania. Now, this isn't some goofy conspiracy thing. People can listen to this carefully.
Mm-hmm.
There's 100,000 provisional ballots.
Okay.
Now these are ballots that have to be reviewed by individual teams, groups of three people, because and this happens, by the way, I think in pretty much every state.
Mm-hmm.
But a provisional ballot might include a person who was registered to vote at one precinct but voted at a different precinct and thus had to fill out a provisional ballot. So, for example, I live in Mercer County and I voted here, but I'm actually registered to vote in Erie,
okay,
right? But I had moved over the last year or something like that. So you go into Mercer and they give you the ballot and you give your signature, put it down, and they make sure that I didn't double vote, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's about 100,000 of those that are still out in Pennsylvania right now.
Wow.
They just started counting them on Saturday morning. And they're going to go, and they're already going, at least 60 to 40 for Trump. And so, and they might go 65-35 for Trump.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, and Trump wins those by 30,000, then he might catch Biden for one thing in Pennsylvania. Although somebody just told me that Biden's now leading Trump by 40,000 in Pennsylvania, but at the very least, it would mean that the difference in Pennsylvania between Trump and Biden is within 0.5%, which automatically
calls for a recount.
A recount.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't have a lot of absentee ballots, overseas ballots. I don't know about military ballots. There might be some of those as well. So the media should not have called Pennsylvania.
Right.
As it did on Friday and Saturday.
I was going to say, on Friday night, didn't Supreme Court Justice Alito insist that the later ballots be segregated from the earlier ballots? And I think the state has said that they are doing that they're compliant with that.
But
do you know anything in particular about that aspect of it?
He did, and that's going to be the Trump campaign's legal case to the Supreme Court. And the Trump campaign is justified in that because what happened was the Pennsylvania state court which is 4-3, and these are elected judges. So the four Democrat elected judges intervened and attempted to change Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's electoral law. They can't do that, Al. The Pennsylvania legislature, that's the province of the Pennsylvania legislature.
So it's a separation of powers issue.
Yeah, and the Pennsylvania legislature said, you can't do this. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do that. And so it's being challenged now at the level of the Supreme Court. And if Justice John Roberts and the other justices truly follow the letter of the law here, right, they'd have to say that, the Pennsylvania judges acted outside of their constitutional abilities. And
didn't they take
they
a look at that?
That and
didn't the Supreme Court take a look at it and decide what not to respond or something?
Yeah, and I think it was 4-4.
Right.
It gets a little shaky, although there's a new challenge now. And by the way, you also have Amy Coney Barrett
right now. Right. Yeah.
who's on the court. And remember, liberals were demanding that she recuse herself, weeks ago from this. And she said basically no, because this is an insult. She didn't speak. She didn't use that word. She's much more diplomatic. But, this suggests that I'm not able to impartially judge a case like this, merely because of the president that appointed me. I can evaluate this.
Yeah.
And so if this were to result in these votes being segregated or thrown out, coming in after the deadline or after November 3rd, I don't know if it'd be enough to swing Pennsylvania, but it might be, especially if Pennsylvania, after these provisional ballots come in, becomes less than 10,000 votes. And by the way, as I'm looking here right now, lo and behold, look out, Arizona is now closer than Pennsylvania. And I, from what I'm reading, there might still be 200,000 votes still out in Arizona.
Wow.
If Arizona is only a difference of 18,000 votes right now, Donald Trump could easily win Arizona. If he were to win, 55-45, something like that, of those remaining votes. A lot of them are Election Day votes.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
so this is really not over, and it's not the media's responsibility. The media doesn't have the authority to call an election.
I know, that's the strangest thing about this. Is that, and there's no concession speech. I mean, it's one thing if the media predicts or projects the winner and there's a concession speech. Who's going to argue about that? But there's no concession speech here, and a sitting president of the United States is claiming there's been fraud. To me, that's the big story. That's where the energies should be directed towards that investigation and the legal battle. In Pennsylvania, I thought at first, when you and I first talked about this, and Trump's numbers were going down, I assumed it was because Philadelphia County was coming in and those numbers were overwhelmingly Democrat. You're not satisfied with that as an explanation, though. Is that right?
This is another curious thing. So the vote in Philadelphia County was 80-18%. In fact, at one point it was 18.8 for Trump. Trump had almost 20% of the vote in Philadelphia County. Mm-hmm. Now, people that are thinking that's bad, no, that's great. I mean, that's actually really
good. For a Republican, yeah. Yeah,
I thought he'd get less than 10%.
Yeah,
which again shows that even the minority vote Donald Trump did very well with. Mm-hmm. So then people are thinking, what about Pittsburgh, Allegheny County? Trump got 40%.
Yeah,
the number's 39.9. Trump got 40% of the vote in Allegheny County.
Mm.
So his numbers are way up. And so we had estimated last week, and in fact, it was actually. It was Bill Stepien of the Trump campaign who said that we're declaring victory in Pennsylvania. I had estimated that Biden would need to win about 80% of the mail-in ballots, and I learned later that Stepien calculated Biden would need 78% of the ballots. And look, he barely got 80% in Philadelphia.
Right. So were there Trump counties unreported at that point?
A whole bunch. In fact, most of the counties that were still doing mail-ins were actually Trump counties. My county, Mercer, where Trump got 62% of the vote.
Wow.
York, which is a big county. I think Trump got 126,000 votes, something like that. Went 62% for Trump. Beaver County, which used to be an old Democrat mill town stronghold. I mean, that scenario, you know, Mike Ditka, Pistol Pete Maravich, Tony Dorsett, all these great athletes, right? It's a huge fracking area. It went 58% for Trump.
Yeah.
Those were all out. So there, in other words, there's no reason to have expected Biden to get 80% of those mail-in ballots.
Yeah, in those counties.
Even if they were mostly Democrat mail-in ballots, he certainly shouldn't have gotten over 80%. And here's maybe the most remarkable number at all. Donald Trump is going to get, Al, at least 400,000 more votes in Pennsylvania than he did in 2016. And if he's going to lose with that?
It's strange.
It's very strange. I'm looking at Erie, PA. It looks like Joe Biden won Erie. I don't know how Joe Biden won Erie. That's impossible. I don't know how Joe Biden won Erie.
Is that largely a Republican county then?
No, but it went for Trump in 2016. He beat Hillary by at least 2.5%, and he was going to beat Biden by at least 2.5%. He seems to have lost it somehow to Joe Biden. And people listening might know about this. It's gone viral. The affidavit that was sworn by the postal worker in Pennsylvania claiming fraud there, that's in Erie County. That's in the Washington Examiner right now.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to keep publishing, I'm sure, on this, and we'll stay in touch.
Sure.
It's amazing. Paul, thanks so much. Great talking with you.
All right. Thanks, Al.
Dr. Paul Kengor, again, the big story here, as I keep coming back to, is the claim of fraud.
Deacon Skin and Surgeries is a comprehensive dermatology center on the border of Troy and Rochester Hills, south of M59, and in Dearborn, west of Telegraph. Deacon Skin and Surgeries perform full skin exams and focus on the diagnosis and treatment of all types of skin cancer and precancerous lesions. All are board-certified dermatologists and fellowship-trained surgeons. Call 248-852-1900. Deacon Skin and Surgeries, a beacon for patient care. 248-852-1900. Is it time to refresh your office or workspace? Office Express believes in supporting the people who bring your business to life and in helping you efficiently reach your goals. They do this by providing creative workplace solutions and tools. They're everything office, including office supplies, furniture, and printed products. Stop by their state-of-the-art furniture showroom or call 877-795-2600 to begin your journey to a more efficient business. This message is sponsored by Office Express OEX, a proud supporter of local Catholic charities.
This week on Christ is the Answer, we continue Father John Ricardo's mission series he called No Greater Love Has a Man Than This. Have you ever really asked yourself, do I trust my life to God? In the face of trials and tribulations, do you offer your distress to Him? Father John shows us this week about the immense value redemptive suffering has through the example of the Passion of Christ. Tune in for Christ is the Answer, Monday through Fridays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to avemariaradio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
A friend of mine was upset about being disrespected by her sister and wanted to confront her but didn't know how. She asked two of us for advice but ended up so angry about the situation, she sent a text to her sister without our suggestions. That text escalated the problem. A text message feud ensued and the sister stopped talking. When texting or emailing, so much communication is lost. All nonverbal communication is gone. Without tone of voice, inflection, or body language, the words are taken at complete face value and can be read as offensive. That is exactly what happened with my friend. Some conversations need to be had in person. Text messaging wasn't around 2,000 years ago, but when Jesus said, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. He meant face to face, not through a messenger, and I'm sure he would mean face to face today and not through a text message. This has been a Christ Center communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Be a blessing to your neighbors in need through your gift to Catholic Charities of Southeast Michigan. Together we can change the faces of despair, loneliness, hunger, and addiction, one blessing at a time. As the charitable arm for the corporal works of mercy throughout the Archdiocese of Detroit, Catholic Charities exists to provide the services that make a difference in the lives of over 20,000 people each and every year in Southeast Michigan. So how would you like to bless your neighbor today? Visit ccsem.org/donate to choose your involvement.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. We continue to try to make sense of what we're seeing here. Again, we do not have state certification of this election. All we have is we have media projections and a claim by former Vice President Biden that he is the victor. The big story for me, as I've said time and again, we have a sitting president who claims this has been a fraudulent election, and he's committing resources to making that case. Now, will he prove his case or not? Well, we'll see. But the point is, it's a story, and everybody likes a good crime novel, right? Because you always think justice is going to be done in the end, so the mystery gets solved. Well, it seems to me this is a mystery that's going to be solved, or... Well, one way or the other, we're going to know whether the president was on top of this or not. With me right now to talk more about the various aspects of this election is Deal Hudson. Deal is author of two new books. We've talked about one that would be very helpful, especially for this time, How to Keep from Losing Your Mind, Educating Yourself Classically to Resist Cultural Indoctrination, and a book we haven't talked about yet, 365 Days of Catholic Wisdom, but we will sometime in the near future. Deal is the host of Church and Culture on Ave Maria Radio. He's the publisher of the Christian Review. You can follow him on Twitter at Deal W. Hudson. Hey, how are you?
Fine, and that W stands for Wyatt, just so you know.
I did know that. I'm not sure I remembered it. I've seen your full name before. Okay.
So, Al,
yeah.
Talk to me. This may end up being like the JFK assassination.
Okay.
And I'm dead serious.
I know you are.
I mean, in 20 years, somebody will make a movie about the 2020 election, the fraud, and I don't know if all the truth will ever come out, but some of it is bound to, as it has about the JFK assassination. But let me put it this way. Abortion reasoning has led to this. And let me tell you what I mean by that.
Yeah, go ahead.
What happens when you build an entire vision of life on a lie?
Mm-hmm.
You build on it, and you agree either explicitly or tacitly as a society to ignore the lie.
Mm-hmm.
And to build and build and build. And you think you're justified in that because you think it's for the sake of well-being, sake
right.
of individual lives, and so forth. But what we've got here is that kind of reasoning that has been focused on the presidency of Donald Trump since the very beginning and beyond it. And what we should see this as is simply what is the direct and obvious consequence of what's been going on for the last 4 years. I remember right after Trump got elected, a New York Times reporter writing a column who said, we can no longer just be reporters.
Right.
We have to be advocates. We have to be partisan for the sake of the nation.
Yeah.
And that shocked me at the time. But, again, you know, I'm getting less and less shockable as we go along.
Yeah. Well,
in my opinion,
this
fraud, and I heard you talking statistics with Paul earlier. I'm not going to go through all that again. This was a comprehensive plan based upon predetermined weak spots in the vote around the country, correlated to states and counties under Democrat control.
Mm-hmm.
This included post office employees, Democrat legislatures and judges, election officials, members of, obviously, media people, and election officials, volunteers, all in the manipulation of paper and electronic ballots. Now, I see this in direct line, a straight line, with the nearly 4 years of accusations toward Trump and some people that went to jail as a consequence about Russian election fraud in 2016. So why wouldn't they create a plan, a comprehensive plan, to make sure that Donald Trump will never be president? I think that's what they've done. However, the most important question is why so many participated in it. What has happened to the American character that we lie so easily, that our integrity can be bought, that the most respected individuals in all fields and institutions have told the lie and participated in the fraud without remorse? The answer is frightening, but must be faced. And here's the answer. The American character is in decline. Not just decline. It is a train wreck. We have generations and generations of young people who have been so educated in a way that they will tell the lie with a smile, any lie that benefits them personally, or it furthers a cause that they believe in, even if they lie and they're dishonest and deceptive to further their cause, they will do it. Justice, fairness, honesty is all out the window. It's pure politics of power. And power always resorts to an ignorance, an ignoring of what is truthful.
Yeah. Well, you've got stories here where the corporate media doubles down on hatred for everyone who voted for Trump. You have this Trump accountability program that, here, let me pull this out. All right, I've got to reach to find. Okay, here it is. The Trump Accountability Project. Remember what they did. We must never forget those who furthered the Trump agenda. We should welcome in our fellow Americans with whom we differ politically, but those who took a paycheck from the Trump administration should not profit from their efforts to tear our democracy apart. The world should never forget those who, when faced with a decision, chose to put their money, their time, and their reputations behind separating children from their families, encouraging racism and anti-Semitism.
All of which is a lie.
Yeah, and negligently causing the unnecessary loss of life and economic devastation from our country's failed response to the COVID-19 pandemic. We should not allow the following groups of people to profit from their experience. One, those who elected him. Two, those who staffed his government. Three, those who funded him. Now, this is, you know, this is an attempt, again, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Is anyone archiving these Trump sycophants for when they try to downplay or deny their complicity in the future? I foresee decent probability of many deleted tweets, writings, photos in the future. So she's suggesting also in another tweet that revenge be taken on these Trump sycophants.
Well, this is their form of the gulag,
right,
which they're creating. And they're going to make it so that the people that they choose to completely destroy their reputation and their futures never get decent employment again. My good friend Matt Schlapp, the head of CPAC, he had one COVID case emerge from his latest CPAC convention. And that then generated a call to boycott sponsoring or being a customer of Matt Schlapp's personal consulting practice.
Wow.
He lost half of his customers in a week.
No.
Half of his income in a week.
Nasty.
So, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg about what's going to be happening. And so I mean, this even says more about the character issue, Al.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about lying to win. It's about then getting revenge on people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old idea that you punish you reward your friends and you punish your enemies. And that this is not about civic responsibility. It's not about national harmony. It's not about a concert of national character. It's about power, as you pointed out earlier. I have to ask you, though, are you actually saying that the President of the United States, with the Justice Department, the resources of the Republican Party nationally and in states, and his own bevy of lawyers, that he's not going to be able to get the empirical question resolved of whether there was a fraud or not?
Here's the problem. The empirical problem is spread across a dozen states.
Yes, I get
and
that.
All the counties in those states. And it's spread across a variety of platforms, from this Dominion service that, you know, they use, where, you know, the chief of staff of Pelosi is on the board of it, to
this was a software program. That
yeah, software program, and it was used in all the swing states where Biden caught up magically. And so, I think the problem will be is, what sort of smoking gun, I mean, really hard fact, can actually emerge? They've already got people confessing, or they're witnesses to fraud, or they're confessing to fraud. That, of course, will not add up to much. What they have to find is something that even CNN can't deny.
Right.
And that is going to have to be, I mean, like a guy lying with his head chopped off in a gutter somewhere holding, you know, holding a letter, you know, to the governor of Michigan saying, you know, I was in charge of defrauding the state of Michigan in the electoral process. So the problem will be it's not a single assassin they're looking for.
Right, right.
It's like this involves hundreds, thousands of people who participated in this at different levels.
Yeah. No, I don't deny that. I don't deny that. But it also means when you've got so many people participating in a fraud at different levels, I grant you that, but when you've got so many participating, there's always the chance that somebody's going to break ranks. And so we'll see.
What happens to people that would break ranks?
Well, again, there's some...
They would have to give up their lives.
Right.
They would have to give up everything. Now,
Whitaker Chambers...
One of the most interesting statistics, I don't know if you went over it with Paul Kangor or not, is that the Judicial Watch came up with over 300 counties where the number of votes, 353 counties in 29 states, with voter registration rates exceeding 100%. Most of those counties, Al, are in Michigan.
Yeah. No, I heard that. And again, that's part of what's going to be investigated through here. Deal, thanks. Good talking with you. We'll have you back as this goes on, and we can continue to try to unpack it.
Soldier on, Al.
We'll talk soon. Thanks.
Bye.
Deal Hudson. Again, you can get him on Twitter at Deal W. Hudson.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. Your search for affordable health care stops here. Since 2014, CMF Curo has provided Catholics with affordable health care sharing that goes beyond insurance. With programs that cost less than many COBRA and ACA-sponsored plans, CMF Curo is the Catholic health sharing experience that enables you to live fully alive while saving money. Call 1-833-GET-CURO to find affordable Catholic health care now. That's 1-833-GETCURO.
There is a silent suffering happening all around us. Families don't know where they will get their next meal. Diseases go untreated. Jesus tells us that following him means that when we see someone who is hungry, we feed them. When we see someone who is sick, we care for them. At Hope Clinic, you can be salt and light in the world. Last year, your support met over 60,000 requests for help. Visit thehopeclinic.org to make lives better in Jesus' name.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Peace does not begin with presidents and prime ministers. It begins with you and me. What is peace? Where do I find peace? How can I be peace in this troubled world? Hi, this is Peggy Stanton. Please join me on A Place of Peace as we seek the answers to these timely and timeless questions.
A Place of Peace, Saturdays at 11 a.m. and Sundays at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Evidences for Christianity. Where do you get information about God? How can you be sure what you read or what you are told by authorities is true? For if the things we are told about Christianity are true, tremendous demands are put upon our lives. And to say we believe them requires that we live them. Elton Trueblood said,
"We should be foolish not to use all the intelligence we can muster in order to try to know whether Christianity is true. To fail to give our minds loyally to this inquiry would not be so much irreverent as stupid."
It's important, therefore, that we get and understand the facts, evidences, and reasons for Christianity. Our life here and for eternity depends on such efforts. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under Resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
This program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit St. Paul Street Evangelization. St. John Paul II stated that for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love, and the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation. So we know we're called, but how do we do it? St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. I mentioned crime novels a little earlier, and there's something about crime novels. I'm surprised at how popular they are. Well, actually, I'm not surprised by how popular they are, because I've loved them too. But I think what is the appeal there? The appeal is that justice is done in the end. You know, the mystery gets solved. The murderer gets identified. Normally, they're apprehended, they're charged, they're convicted. And at the end, there's a collective sigh of relief. Justice has been done. And this is a universal human longing, by the way. You know, we all have a sense that there's something wrong with this place. Things are out of kilter, right? Things are not quite right in my country. We're talking about that. In my neighborhood, in my family. And in our own personal lives, if we were given a blank sheet of paper and asked to write down the names of people who had done something wrong to us, most of us probably wouldn't have difficulty filling in the page. Now, if we wanted to be especially strict in our examination of conscience, we might also be able to compile a list of things we've done to people. Wars start because people can't reconcile. Long-term grievances They might start with persons. They might start with neighborhoods, families, royal families. And eventually you've got irreconcilable conflict, global scale conflict. We all probably know families in which certain siblings haven't spoken in 30 years. And putting things right is difficult. The teacher. Maybe the teacher's unable to sort out the problem in the playground, right? He did it. No, he did it. Parents aren't always able to reconcile squabbling siblings. We got diplomats and peacemakers, brilliant people. They're just not able to bring all the parties together around a table and work out an agreement. And if they do, it often isn't fulfilled. I think of the Camp David Accords and the remarkable work of then-President Carter with Menachem Begin from Israel and Anwar Sadat from Egypt. They did sign this, but what happened? Well, Anwar Sadat was assassinated for it. This sense of justice, that things need to be set right, is a signpost that is pointing to something very essential to our nature. But it's a broken signpost, because no matter how hard we strive to live up to the ideal, we're going to fall, often in ways that even create more injustice. This is what N.T. Wright points out in his newest book, Broken Signposts, How Christianity Makes Sense of the World. And I'm especially interested in it because he spends a lot of time in the Gospel of John here. John 3, 19 through 21. Of course, everybody's familiar with John 3, 16, for God so loved the world, you know. But John 3, 19, 21 is not as well known. Light has come into the world, and people love darkness rather than light, because what they were doing was evil. I mean, that's a statement about the human condition, that light comes into the world, but people love darkness rather than light, because what they do is evil. And they don't want to bring their evil into the light. So John's gospel gives us a God who cares deeply about justice. It's a fundamental point. We, human beings made in his image and likeness, have within ourselves a strong echo of this longing for justice. But in God himself, that longing is complete. It's perfected. And part of the hope of the Christian faith is the knowledge that God will not allow injustice to be the last word. You know, this doesn't have to be put off until the return of Jesus. I mean, even in history, God sometimes allows justice to be done, right? Injustice is not the inevitable last word in this world. There are many times justice is done. We know that in the long run, though, that justice will be done. That's a central element in the good news of the gospel. So the Gospel of John is really a book about how the whole world is being put right at last. It's a book about righteousness. It's a book about justice. It's the story of how the Creator God himself is passionate about justice and longing for justice. It tells us what he's done to bring justice about. And the ultimate truth in the Gospel of John that's important for us to remember in this respect for justice is that we're going to encounter two very dark realities in John's Gospel. Jesus himself is a victim of injustice. That's a very dark reality, the crucifixion. We also encounter the power of the accuser, the Satan, the adversary, who does consciously, deliberately, personally exacerbate injustice in this world. So I bring this up because in looking at our modern political situation, okay, we need to fall out of the web of all these arguments about vote count, and they're important. But behind all of this, there are bigger realities. And the reality is that Christ himself was a victim of injustice in this world. And there is, in fact, a powerful adversary, the accuser, the Satan, that is seeking to exacerbate injustice in this world. So when God promises to do justice, those promises are challenged. And you can see that, again, through the gospel. Early on in the gospel, you catch a few accusations about Jesus. What miraculous sign can you show us to prove your authority to cleanse the temple? Right. This is in John chapter 2. The Jewish leadership demands of him, what miraculous sign can you show us to prove your authority to do this? And Jesus says, well, destroy this temple and I'll raise it again in 3 days. Basically, kill me, destroy me, and I'll rise and inflict you can inflict upon me the gravest of injustices, but I'm going to rise again. That's early on in the gospel. And as the chapters proceed, you have this funny thing happening. You've got Jesus expanding his frontier of acceptance, expanding his idea of who's a disciple. So you have, of course, Nicodemus, the Pharisee, is presented as a disciple. You have the Samaritan woman as a disciple. It's expanding the range of who's acceptable in God. And Jesus is basically changing the common mindset of first century Palestinian Judaism at that time. So throughout, Jesus is summoning witnesses to bear testimony on his behalf. There's John the Baptist, there's the Father himself, there's the man who's healed at the pool in John chapter 5. You know, and what do we learn there? That because of this man's witness, the Jews tried all the harder to kill him. Not only because Jesus was breaking the Sabbath, but because he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. So this two things are going on. Jesus is expanding the range of his disciples, and these people are bearing witness to who he is. But at the same time, there's accumulated accusers closing in on him. They're calling him demon-possessed, John chapter 7, 8, 9. And it's in this setting that Jesus insists that right judgment is vital, and that if you want to judge rightly, you must do so on God's terms. You don't judge by appearance. And that John chapter 7:24. Then you've got the story of the woman caught in adultery. What's going on? People are judging by appearances. And so you're asking, what's justice going to look like in this situation? You've got the Jewish leadership again manipulating this woman. They're trying to frame Jesus. They want to know. It's a justice question. Is he going to uphold the law of Moses or isn't he? And Jesus turns the tables and he says, whichever of you is without sin, go ahead, throw the first stone. So with that, he's accusing them of both sin and hypocrisy, and they know it. They slink away, starting with the eldest. I think it's interesting that the eldest go away first. The youngest, the young Turks, hang around, thinking they still have some revolutionary action that they can take. The older guys realize, we've seen this before, let's get out of here. So they fail to incriminate Jesus, but they accuse him. They believe that he's demon-possessed. And what's interesting is Jesus says, your father is the father of lies. They're claiming their father is Abraham. And he's saying, in your accusations against me, you are doing the work of the adversary. You have become complicit with the accuser. You know? I mean, this is interesting because he still hasn't fully identified who this villain is, who this accuser is. We get to chapter 12, and he does. Jesus points to, quote, this world's ruler, the ruler of this world. That's the real culprit. That's the dark power behind the evil, behind the death that's defaced, that's been corrupting God's good world. And justice is going to be done at last. But God himself is going to have to act. Human justice is not going to be sufficient. And if John's gospel were some kind of a crime novel, right? John chapter 12 is where we'd get a good, clear hint as to who the real villain is. And things continue to be sorted out as the gospel goes along. Jesus makes that great statement. He says, "My moment has come." He bursts out with a whole new theme. And he's saying that this dark power that's been acting through the Jewish leadership and is in competition with the power of those who are bearing witness to the goodness of Jesus. This combat is going on. Jesus is saying, now comes the judgment of this world. Now this world's ruler is going to be thrown out. And when I'm lifted up from this earth, I will draw all people to myself. So remember, throughout the gospel, he's been drawing people to himself, his disciples. He's been healing people. They're bearing witness to what he's doing. But at the same time, the Jewish leadership is playing the role of the accuser, the adversary. And this dark power, beginning in John chapter 12, is revealed. It's a power that wants to destroy. God created good. This is the power that wants to undo the good creation of God. So Jesus warns his followers that the ruler of this world is coming, John 14:30. And on one level, he might be referring to the Roman Empire. I mean, he's going to face Pontius Pilate before too long. But really, when you see him interact with Pilate, Pilate himself is just the mouthpiece for some superhuman power that lives by destruction, that thrives on injustice, that embodies injustice, even while claiming that he's bringing justice to the world, as Pilate was doing. This is the contest that John is asking us to look at. The whole point of the story, I have to wrap this up, is that in the crucifixion of Jesus, we see the world that we know. The world where we want justice, but where justice doesn't happen. But it's also the world in which the Word took on human flesh to announce and to embody a different sort of justice, which he does reveal in resurrection.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
This program is brought to you in part by the following nonprofit company.
The Christians of the Holy Land are suffering now more than ever. Did you know that only 2% of the population in the Holy Land are Christian? Learn about unique challenges of Christians in Israel and Palestine from leading Bible scholars and evangelists such as Jeff Cavins, as well as Christians who are living there today. Join a free 90-minute online event taking place Sunday, November 15th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Register for this free event at selecttogive/hope. That's selecttogive/hope.
During the month of November, as many of our families are giving thanks, we tend to focus on the love we have for one another. During this time, Detroit Funeral and Cemetery Services ask you to consider contacting one of our local cemetery offices for a tour of our beautiful grounds, receive some valuable information, and begin the process of protecting your family by offering a gift of love to put their mind to rest, knowing you have taken care of your eternal plans. For more information, visit the website cfcsdetroit.org.
Did you know that graduates of Ann Arbor's Father Gabriel Richard High School are currently studying at the Air Force Academy, the Naval Academy, and the U.S. Military Academy at West Point? FGR's excellent academics and athletics prepare them for the challenge while nurturing their desire to serve. FGR is now accepting applications for mid-year transfers and next school year. Academic scholarships are available for well-qualified students. Visit FGRHS.org. That's FGRHS.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for being with me and urging you to stay aboard. We've got Catholic Answers Live coming up as I go off the air. Trent Horn asking the question, why? Why are you pro-choice? right? I mean, that's the ultimate in injustice, ultimately, right? It's the destruction of human life. Trent's going to be there taking questions and engaging people. I'll be back tomorrow, Lord willing, for another edition of this thing that we call Crest in the Afternoon. And you can also follow up on our segments today. Every segment usually has material that supplements what we discussed on the air. Books that are mentioned are in the online bookstore, too. So, for instance, N.T. Wright's new book, Broken Signposts, How Christianity Makes Sense of the World. That'll be available there. But go to the Cresta Guest Archives for the articles that we referenced today. I'll see you tomorrow.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's A-V-E-M-A-R-I-A Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.